You will hit a wall. Hit a wall. Hit a wall. Hit a wall. Hit a wall.
The wall?
The wall.
The wall?
Wall to wall, brother.
You're breaking the wall!
This wall.
The wall.
You're listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday, presented by your local Ford dealers and itsnotagameillinois.com. We are very proud of the group of football experts that we have put together as regulars during football season on this show, and even the one-offs that we have on often provide all kinds of wisdom to get you ready for a Bears game. So what we do is Adam Studzinski selects the best of the week, and he puts it together in something that we call the Wall of Sound. On Monday, Anthony Heron discussed the impact of big Andrew Billings against the Texans.
Andrew Billings beat that man to death. Sweet love was made to Peter Skoronski yesterday by the big fella, and I appreciated it.
And it wasn't only on rundowns. And I know a lot of times, but you know, somebody just, you know, sees either big guy, they hear someone is one of the best linemen in football, and they just kind of assume that every aspect of their game is dominant. But Andrew Billings, when he joined up with the Bears going into last season, he wasn't thought of as an exceptional pass rusher early in the season. He didn't show a lot of pass rush penetration into the backfield. His game improved in that regard throughout the season last year. And now coming into this season, first game of the year, not only was he impactful against blocks, but in some passing downs, we saw Andrew Billings getting into the backfield, getting to the edge of blockers and being really effective in that manner. Bears defensive front as a whole, I don't view it as all their problems being solved, but the first game out of the books with against an offensive line where that team has spent some draft capital and free agent capital over the last couple of seasons here to put a good, formidable group together. I thought it was a matchup that the Bears D-line would be challenged and tested by. And schematically, Tennessee did some really effective things running the football early, but I didn't necessarily put a lot of the ill fits in the Bears run on the D-line early in the game. And then as the game wore on, and especially in the second half, when the game starts to near cold crust depth and you got to be able to lean on some aspect of your team, the Bears D-line was really impactful throughout. So I thought for the first time out here, for the first game of the season, with a lot of that youth and inexperience that we're still hoping to see growth from, yes, Andrew Billings was exceptional. Javon Dexter had some really nice moments as well. Talked to you guys about his pad level a good bit. There were some really nice looks at Javon Dexter using exceptional pad level for his size, getting into blockers for run fits initially and then converting into a pass rusher, getting rid of those guys. There was some good tape out there being shown by the Bears D-line.
Were my eyes deceiving me, or did I see Andrew Billings at times lined up on the outside shoulder of the guard in what we would call a three technique?
You did, and I'm wondering what the purpose was for, because it happened. It happened pretty frequently in the game with Billings and Dexter in the game together, where at least last season, Billings was your nose. And he was the guy playing, you know, shade on the center on a consistent basis, and then the other guys would kind of, you know, flop to either three technique. This season, at least this first game, that's not what the Bears did. Now, is it? And in my mind, I'm not convinced that Javon Dexter is the style of three technique that Matt Eberflus would maybe value most in this scheme, because he's not a guy with the consistent suddenness, like that burst out of the stance I was just describing from Daryl Taylor that some teams and a number of guys do have on the interior of their D-line. He's not necessarily a really sudden player in that regard, but he can take up space, he can eat up blocks, he can penetrate, and he's showing that he can get into the backfield and make some plays here. So is it, hey, let's give Javon Dexter some looks over the nose as well. We've seen Billings start to develop his ability to penetrate as well. So just make them interchangeable. You don't have to have Dexter as the three technique consistently. You can just have them play left and right. You can have a preferred matchup at times and allow them to decide, or just go into each individual game plan and say that we're good, whoever's the nose, whoever's the three, and you can sort of, you know, have that interspersed throughout the game, just sort of depending on what the situation calls for.
Then on Tuesday, TJ Edwards helped us look ahead to the Texans, who he says
are as advertised.
They've got a bunch of weapons over there, and you know, obviously just had a really good week running the football too, and that kind of only just opens things up for him in terms of the play action game, taking shots down the field when you kind of have to load the box if you're not stopping the run. So I know that'll be a point of emphasis for us this week. You know, it's a really good football team, and you know, we're excited because we know it's a great challenge. You know, Sunday night, it doesn't get much better than that against a really high quality opponent. But you know, they got weapons everywhere. Like I said, I think their backs are really good. Their offensive line is really good, and you know, they got a guy who orchestrates it all. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. You know, it's gonna be I know it's gonna be jumping in there too. So we're excited to get down there.
TJ Edwards joins us every Tuesday, as does our quarterbacks coach, Tim Jenkins, who pushed back on Kurt Warner's claim on The Score that pure progressions aren't as good for young quarterbacks to learn.
It's very similar to what happens at a political debate, which is we can all cite one nugget that makes what I just said true, right? So it's like Kurt goes, you know, like, you know, the pure progressions, they're not successful. It's like what so-and-so did, you know, and it's like, okay, well, you also could say, oh, it's what the Miami Dolphins do. And last time I checked, that offense is rolling, right? Or it's what the Chiefs, like, there's so many things that, you know, when you're debating these things, it's like you really have to be truthful about the whole argument. To me, the whole argument is, hey, it's got to be 75-25 with a young quarterback, 25% PSL. And when do you do it? You do it on first and 10. You do it on second and short. You do it on down and distance where the defense is going to be somewhat more stagnant, right? If you were to throw one of these quarterbacks in to 100% pre and post snap look against the exotic looks that we get today in today's pass-centric NFL, the Peyton Manning interception record would be shattered by week 8. Like, it just, you can't do it. What we need is 75% pure progression, keep the staples, give them PSLs when the down and distance is going to be stagnant, it's going to be more simplified. But really, you need to help these guys by saying, hey, here's one, here's two, here's three, and then get them used to playing on time. A lot of like the criticisms of pure progressions that I'm hearing are like, you know, it's really hard to tell if the first guy's there. And it's like, no, nowadays you strictly tie it to footwork. Hey, 5-hitch clean to your first progression. If he's not there, reset and move on. We don't need to hold the football and stare at somebody. Reset, move on. If your second's there, he's not, reset, get to your check down. The plays naturally put defenders in conflict versus what we used to see more of would be like a mirrored concept where it's like, okay, hey, I'm going to pick on this defender. I'm going to watch him. Okay, if he bails with the smash, or if he bails with the smash corner, boom, I'm going to take the hitch. If he jumps the hitch, I'm going to take the smash corner. I don't think it's like as simplified as we sometimes make it sound. And I think the pure progression stuff really is the way, you know, kind of back to Lawrence, it's the way that we, you know, week in and week out, you can really make these young quarterbacks, these short weeks really count, as if we're installing more plays that naturally stress the defenders, and then we're coaching them and we're really hammering their footwork to work the progression correctly.
Jenkins also pushed back on the idea that keeping Caleb Williams in the pocket is the best strategy against him.
I hear people say that a lot, like, hey, we gotta, you know, if I'm playing Caleb, I keep him in the pocket. And I'm like, dude, I don't see that as a huge advantage for the defense. I don't see that as a huge place that he struggles. I honestly see where he struggled this week, in my opinion, was like, we just missed some balls that I don't think we're ever going to miss again. And like, I know on Hard Knocks, he said he doesn't get nervous. Like, that's just not true. Everybody knows that's not true. Like, Peyton Manning still gets nervous going on ESPN. The dude's worth $1 billion talking football, right? Like, I mean, everybody gets nervous, right? Like, it is what it is. I get nervous before I come on here, and then you guys team me up with a softball, and then I'm like, oh, I'm good to go again. You know, you guys are the best in the business. So to me, I'm like, I don't know. I don't think that's a recipe to beat him. I really don't. I think they're going to start gashing people. I think when I come on week 5, I really think it's going to be drastically light years ahead of this. I think what we saw was a rookie quarterback in week 1 miss a couple of layups that he'll never miss again. And I do think we saw a scheme that had some dudes running wide open on some big play opportunities, which, like, after what we went through last year, to me, the fact that we were trying to drive the football down the field and scheme up double moves, like, that's all I needed to see to be a happy guy.
Robert Mays of the Athletic Football Show joined us on Wednesday, and one of the things he told us is why he similarly isn't panicking after Caleb Williams struggled in week 1.
his down-to-down play at the quarterback position was significantly better than I think that final stat line would lead you to believe. So that
how and why
feel at least a little bit better. His eyes are going to the right place. He's playing on time for the most part when he's allowed to, when there's not instant pressure. The ball is going to where it probably should go. There were just weird accuracy issues. You know, obviously we have the out and up miss to Keenan Allen that should have been a touchdown, but you know, he dirted probably three or four throws over the middle of the field that it was just kind of weird to see. It's like, I don't understand why he's missing in that way. Low misses are better than high, and pretty much all of them were low. So if you want to spin it optimistically, that's fine. You had three batted balls that probably could have been completed. So I just think that completion percentage, based on how the game actually went, probably should have crept up closer to like 60-ish percent.
On Thursday, Matt Bowen explained where Bears can make corrections on offense in week two.
Now, can you come back this week and put 35, 40 points on the board? I don't think you should believe that, but you can see more. Just basic stuff. Extending drives, right? One of the big narratives coming out of that game in week one is, well, Tennessee had the ball, right? Complete ball control. Well, that happens when you can't get first downs. You know, so where does that start? The third down passing game. What can we do to make corrections there against a team in Houston that is going to be more zone heavy at times? A lot of split safety coverage. How can we attack split safety coverage this week? How can we utilize the tight end position? Cole Kmet has to be a big part of the game plan this week, in my opinion, especially working the middle of the field versus those zone coverage. And with the quarterback, just get him to slow down a little bit. And you saw this with all the young quarterbacks this weekend. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix. Their internal clock was moving too fast at times. And at times that forces you to play frenetically, both with footwork and with your eyes. I think you can get Caleb in better situations, especially in those critical downs, where he has leveled reads. We can get the ball out quickly. We can ID a positive matchup based on formation alignment and what you've seen in terms of defensive tendencies. They give him a clear and defined read where he can slow down, make the throw, move the sticks.
Bowen also said that if the Bears are going to hang with these superior Texans, one thing they're going to need, explosive plays.
There should be a jump from game one to game two and so on down the season. And even when you have steps backwards, because the young quarterbacks in this league are going to have down games somewhere in the middle of the season too. Can you then go forward the next week? So you do want to see progression offensively. You do want to see an offense win on third downs. You want to see an offense win inside the red zone, right, when they didn't last week. And those are the critical moments that win or lose football games. So can they execute better in the red zone? Can they execute more in third down? Can they create explosive plays? If you want to stay in the game versus Houston, you're going to have to create explosive plays in the pass game. There's no question about that. You have to. And you have to extend drives. Because look what Houston did last week against the Colts. They had 40 rushing attempts. C.J. Stroud had 32 passing attempts. That is complete ball control offense. And they are a different football team now with Joe Mixon at running back. They are different. That is an added dynamic to their football team that gives them a downhill runner with power on contact and can finish at the point of attack. And I think this is what Bobby Slowick wants to be. He wants to be balanced. You know, coming from that San Francisco coaching tree, he wants to be balanced. They want to use misdirection. They want to use pre-snap movement. And they want to be in position where they completely control the tempo of the football game. So if you're going to compete with them, especially on the road on a national stage, you have to create explosives on the pass game with Caleb Williams.
Bucky Brooks said there were some outsized expectations for Caleb in his first game.
I think week one was a kind of a back-to-reality moment for everyone around the program in terms of what he will be early until he settles in. I think what he found out is the speed and the tempo of the game escalates quickly once you get into the regular season. The complexities of the defense that you face from preseason to regular season change. So you see changing pictures. And I think he just has to kind of understand how the game has to be played to be successful. The one thing that I'm encouraged by is, look, the team was able to win without him bringing his A game. He was able to flash some things that we've seen him do time and time again in terms of the ball coming out, being on target, and those things. But it comes down to consistency. If I have to make a comparison or an analogy, I would really try and compare it to what Caitlin Clark experienced with the WNBA. I think if people go back and remember how her season started and look at how it ended, I would expect Caleb Williams to have a similar journey. It takes a while to adapt to pro sport, and no matter how high you're drafted, it still is an acclimation period. I think he'll catch up to it, but I think it may be a little slower than we anticipated based on the expectations and the reality of playing the National Football League.
I love the Wall of Sound. And speaking of the wall, you can join The Score's Shane Reardon for a football watch party Sunday, 6 to 8 p.m. at The Wall in Marcus Gurney Cinemas when Chicago takes on Houston in prime time. Enjoy some great food and drink and watch the game on The Wall's massive screen. That's Sunday from 6 to 8 with Shane Reardon at The Wall in Marcus Gurney Cinema. Great job, studs. That was fine, fine work. Also, great job by our producers finding something very interesting would otherwise be sort of a dry business podcast. But this one featured the general manager of the Chicago Bears, and we got a little bit of insight into something that we can only call the revenge of Ryan Poles next on The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes. Middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Sources say the Carolina Panthers are moving all the way from number 9 to the number 1 overall selection, trading with the Chicago Bears for the right to draft any quarterback they want.
That's how we got here.
Any quarterback they want.
Any quarterback they want.
Yeah, you see, which direction they went in.
Yep, I think they got the one they wanted, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
And the reason they did has been because of some of the prestidigitation of Ryan Poles, what he has been able to turn assets into more assets. He has been able to use perhaps the Jedi mind trick on some of his counterparts to give them these opportunities. Well, it's a really good catch, and I don't know how this found its way to our production staff. You said
came on my timeline.
Said you listened to this whole podcast.
I tried to. I fell asleep.
Well,
I got to the part that we're gonna feature, but it dry is the word that I would use. Like, it was just, you know, two business guys talking about business, and Ryan Poles had some interesting answers, but he wasn't exactly bringing out a lot of flavor.
It's not a football podcast. It's called the Excellent Leader Podcast. So it is a business podcast. But in this, there's a couple minutes about Ryan Poles sharing what was, in his mind, the biggest setback that he faced.
One of the hardest moments I had was not getting the Carolina job. That was my first interview, and I thought I did really well. I prepared really well. I was, you know, you kind of feel in the zone when you go through the interview process. It started with Zoom and then it was in person. It's not talked about much, but you come up with this philosophy based on your experience and you share how you want to go about changing this organization and putting them in a really good position. And when you don't get the job, you go back to your old job. You've already mentally put yourself in a leadership position, especially in the GM job. And then you have to go back to the old philosophy where you basically were like, all right, I took these good things from what we do now. I don't like these things, so I'm going to toss that out. But you got to go live in that, and you got to be supportive to your group. It was the first time I felt like mental health, disappointment, frustration. Like, I had a lot of that when I returned back to Kansas City, and it was eye-opening. And it allowed me to start to put structure together, an executive coach, clinician, to tap into to express some of these feelings that I was going through, because I didn't feel like I was a great teammate to my group when I got back. I was more angry and frustrated because, you know, I had this great plan and now I don't get to do it. The other thing is my agent challenged me to say, hey, where are your blind spots? So you look at your interview and you obviously didn't know everything, the things that you felt like you felt short on, let's go attack those. It just, the personal growth and development process kicked off, and it was always there, but it took another step for me where I have to go find answers and things that maybe I don't have in Kansas City, you know, that didn't allow me to have the answers to those questions. I got to go out and figure those things out. So from a performance standpoint, from an analytics standpoint, I got to go seek that information so that I have answers and I can put a team together when I have the opportunity to.
Now, tell me if you find this funny, because I find it hilarious. that this was the lowest point, the biggest difficulty that he had was not getting the Panthers general manager job. And his agent challenged him, where are your blind spots? So what does he do? You know what I'm going to do to the Panthers? I'm going to take all their good players and all their draft picks.
I mean, petty is a word, right?
But it's just hysterical. Okay. All right. So you don't want me as your GM. Oh, who is your GM, by the way? Can I talk to him for a second? Yeah, put him on the phone. Okay. Hi, I'm Ryan. All right. Give me all your good players and all your draft picks, and then your team's going to be one of the worst teams that we can remember. Is that cool? Okay. We're good. Thanks.
Ryan Poles telling that story, it literally sounds like what I would expect, like, the Joker to say, explaining how Batman dropped him in a vat of acid, and that's how he got his start.
I just coughed pizza out of my nose.
My bad. I didn't mean to cause that. But what I'm saying is, like, he's literally sitting there calmly explaining why he is the man he is today off the rejection. It's like, if you ever seen a meme, it's like, you know, guy gets rejected by girl, and then he shows up, he's like muscled out, like, yep, she created a monster.
Well, that gets back to the old Charles Atlas ads in old comic books about getting sand kicked in your face. The bully on the beach goes to the little pipsqueak and kicks sand in his face, and then he goes, I used Charles Atlas, and then he...
I do one better. Back in the 1980s, the milk campaign, where the guy gets bumped into like a high school locker, and then they flash forward, and he's like, excuse me, guys. Boom, boom. And he bumps those guys out of the way because now he's huge. Like, it's like Captain America style.
Is that where Jim Harbaugh got his milk thing?
It might be. It was a whole campaign, the milk ads.
Because you know, the Harbaugh's got this weird thing about...
He's definitely got the weird thing.
Well, he's got a weird thing just because he's weird. But this whole thing, I drank a lot of milk.
Yeah.
Oh, we drank
steak and milk, right?
We drank so much milk.
That's what he eats like today, is steak and with milk.
Great. Well, I mean, it's not kosher, but, you know, whatever he wants to do is...
I drank a lot of milk, Andrea. A lot of milk. Whole milk, though. Not the candy ass 2% or skim milk.
I'm with him.
Whole milk.
Not the candy ass 2%.
But I'm with, as long as I have enough lactase, I'm with him
on
the...
A lot of milk.
I'm with him on the whole milk.
That sounds like he's in the back of like an arena doing his promo for WWE. A lot of milk. Oh, like that's what I can picture.
A lot of milk.
Listen here, brother.
Yes, but the promo is not in the arena. It's in a barn and there's cows.
Yes. Right. Yes. Right, look. Everybody's got their thing that motivates them, Dan.
I milk these cows directly into my mouth, brother.
Are you saying you can't relate to Matt? Excuse me, to Ryan Poles? You can't relate to him, Dan, because you've never had a moment that you've suffered, and you're like, I'm going to turn this into something else.
I guess it's, but it's not usually like that big a deal. Everybody challenged to do this, but it's just the revenge has been so complete. It's like a Game of Thrones kind of thing.
Hold on.
Where it's like the kingdom has been challenged, and I will murder all of their families and like burn their houses down.
So you know Game of Thrones?
No, I don't know anything.
Well, there's a
I only know what shows
there's
up.
There's like a child
puzzles.
King who's like the worst person on earth,
okay,
named Joffrey, right?
Okay,
and he gets murdered, poisoned. Ooh. And we never know who did it until the scene when they come to kill this woman and her whole whatever, and his uncle, or I guess father.
Spoiler alert.
Alert.
Yes, spoiler alert. But if you haven't seen it by now, you're not going to see it, okay? And they're like, she was like, I did it. And I love, like, it just, the petty was so strong. I was like, I'm not a petty person, but I do laugh a good bit at other people's pain.
And she's like, and tell his mom, Cersei, tell Cersei, I want her to know it was me.
I want her to know it was me who killed her son.
Let's say it's Ryan Poles. Like, I want you to tell Carolina. I want
tell
them to
David,
know it was me.
Tell David Temper.
But everybody knows already. It's like...
But he does it so matter-of-factly.
Yes, and it's calm, cool, and collected. It's very...
The way he delivers it is so kind of quiet. Like, even when we heard all the Jordan stories, that you could see behind his eyes that it was still Jordan being a lunatic and, you know, wanting to drink the blood of his enemies. Poles is just like, yeah, well, I had to, it hurt me, and I knew I had to do better. But he kind of
had to make them pay. He made them pay. You're going to pay for that number one pick that you're going to spend on Bryce Young. And
they're still paying.
They still have to give up a second round pick
this year. Yeah. And it's, you know how high that second round pick is going to be? It's going to be like a first rounder. It's going to be like one of the most valuable picks because it's like a first rounder without the guarantees.
And Dan, when you're talking about like how calm he is versus like you expect a little bit more out of, do you want like the Samuel L. Jackson? And I hope he burn in hell. Is that what you want?
I mean, I never mind that.
Okay.
But just the quiet, matter of fact, professional petty.
Yeah, that's the best way to be petty. Be petty enough to let people know that you want them to know it was you, but like, not that you take great satisfaction, but like, yo, this is what happens when you cross me. Mm-hmm. Like, matter of factly, like, this is the way it's got to be.
There's sort of like, and I didn't watch The Wire either.
Ah, about to say. But I was literally about to bring up The Wire.
That kind of reminds me of some of the badass about
Marlo?
Stuff.
Marlo Stanfield? Okay, so like he's going into the, like, I think it was like a 7-Eleven or something, like the corner store. And like the security guards, you can't come in here. He's like, what? What do you mean? And he's like, no, you know, I respect you. He's like, see, the problem is you want it to be one way, but it's the other way. Later in that episode, that man died. You know what I'm saying? Like that's what we're talking about here. That's the levels.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, you're ruining
my bad.
Ruining look, everything for
it's
everybody.
Friday, okay?
All the 20-year-old shows getting spoiled.
Yeah, exactly. Like if we're doing spoiler alerts, it's like that's like a spoiler alert on a different world. Hey, Whitley,
studs, close your ears.
Whitley, Dwayne, they get married.
Wait till he gets to what happened to the candy factory on I Love Lucy.
Oh,
yeah, but it's, believe me, that conveyor belt speeds up real fast.
Spoiler alert.
Alert. Alert.
Yep.
Alert.
Alert. Tying it back to sports. Yeah, spoiler alert. My favorite spoiler of all time.
Wait till the Mambo instructor comes over to Ralph Crandon's apartment.
Do you guys remember when Avengers Endgame came out?
Oh, yeah.
Shady McCoy got on Beyonce's internet and on the Twitter app and was like, I can't believe they got my man Tony Stark.
that was audacious. Like, dude, what are you doing?
It was so. It was like the day the movie came out. It was so audacious.
Yeah, that was not cool.
Well, that's like when the stories about when Empire Strikes Back came out.
Oh,
and where people are standing in line. They've been standing in line for 3 hours.
And people
four
are coming
hours,
out.
And people are like, can you believe that Darth
Vader is Luke's
Skywalker's father? Oh my!
Another
God.
Spoiler alert! Another spoiler alert! Yeah.
Sorry.
Man.
Sorry to do that one. Sorry.
Spoiler alert.
Alert. Sorry. And the 414 says that's the best part. The revenge is not complete because he still gets their second round pick. He's not done like pulling the bricks out from their foundation and slowly watching the castle, the ramparts, the parapets all collapsing on themselves.
I know he's cool, calm, and collected, but I really hope that Ryan Poles sits in his office and thinks about that trade and has like a maniacal, like, villain laugh to himself.
I can't even imagine him having a maniacal villain laugh. That's what makes it so great, because he is that matter of fact about handling his business. And business, as far as I could tell, is being handled.
And we know that he's watching on that oddly concave television screen, that monitor that he has on his desk.
Yeah,
is that, what does that do? The it's not flat. It's got a concavity convexity thing going on there. David Foster Wallace reference for those who get it. When we return, something happened in minor league baseball that is reminiscent of one of the great South Park episodes. And I didn't ever think I would see something like this happen in professional baseball. But it did. We'll tell you about it next.
A lot of milk.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Caller 6 of The Score's contest line, 312-540-0670. Will win a pair of tickets to see Jeff Lynn's ELO live at the United Center on Saturday, September 28th. That right now, caller 6, do it. So I saw this story cross, and I'm like, well, this is wild. This is wild. I mean, you remember the scene in Bull Durham when Crash Davis tries to teach his pitching protege, Nuke LaLoosh, Epi Calvin, to you, a lesson by giving the batter a tip on what's coming.
Oh, yeah.
He says, and when you speak of me, speak well. Gives him the tip, hits the ball out. Walks there, goes,
it's a great line. When you speak of me, speak well.
And anything that flies that far ought to have a flight attendant on it, whatever it is. So this is now real. This is Jeff Passan and Kylie McDaniel on ESPN.
The Minnesota Twins released minor league catcher Derek Bender Thursday after he told opposing hitters the types of pitches that were coming to the plate during at-bats in a game last week that eliminated his team from playoff contention. Bender, a sixth-round draft pick out of Coastal Carolina in July, was playing for the Fort Myers Mighty Muscles, the Twins' single-A affiliate. That was the name of my kid's summer league club team. It was in the second game of a September 6th doubleheader. He told multiple hitters for the Lakeland Flying Tigers, a Detroit farm team, the specific pitches being thrown by starter Ross Dunn. Lakeland scored four runs in the second inning and won the game 6-0 to clinch the Florida State League West Division and eliminate the Mighty Muscles from playoff contention. Fort Myers coaches were notified by Lakeland coaches about Bender's pitch tipping. Bender's willingness to tip pitches surprised Lakeland players. There were no indications of wrongdoing from the Flying Tigers. Bender had told teammates he wanted the season to be over.
What? This is a crazy story. When I read it, I was like, this can't be right.
He wanted the season to be over. He was tired of playing baseball.
Man, I respect it.
I like stand on it. Now you don't have a job. Maybe he doesn't like playing baseball, so maybe he shouldn't be playing baseball.
So I thought, like, that reminds me of something. It reminds me of something. It reminds me of something. And then I realize episode 5 of season 9 of South Park.
It's very specific. I like it.
Is called, the title of the episode is The Losing Edge. And if you remember, what happens is that the boys who are representing the South Park Little League are having a miserable summer because they're tired of playing baseball. They don't want to play baseball anymore. For the South Park Cows, they find it boring. The parents are all annoying. They were happy when they won their last game because they thought the season was over. And then they find out that the playoffs are coming and they don't want to play in the playoffs because they want their summer to start. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. And then remember what happens? I think so they get to the field to take on whatever the opponent is from the other town, and they find out that the kids on the opposing team feel exactly the same way they do.
Hey, guys, look, we don't want to win. So here's a list of all the pitches I'm going to throw in order.
Ooh!
I don't think so, South Park.
Yeah, you think we want to win? Then we have to keep playing this boring game.
Yeah!
Uh-huh.
You hate this game too?
Yeah, and then we won the stupid regionals and had to do this lousy tournament.
We want to play video games.
Oh, no!
Look, we're going to be the losers tonight, all right?
I don't think so. There's no way you can lose to us. We're going down. We're going to get creamed.
No, we're going to get creamed. We'll just see about that.
Yeah.
This guy had to have gotten the idea from this episode. This has to be where he thought, you know what? I'm just going to tip the pitches like in South Park.
Like, the thing is, he was getting paid to play baseball. He signed for $297,500 as the 188th pick in the draft. That was slightly below slot, by the way. But, like, what are we doing? He gets to keep the bonus money, at least.
I just think it's like as ridiculous as and the level of satire of South Park. Sometimes you just think, and I know that the Simpsons always gets credit for saying, well, they see the future, and they even as over the top as it was, little they know that life imitated art. But come on, man, I never ever thought a professional baseball player would just be
no,
just wanted to go home.
So you want to say come on and act like this is just out of the realm of just possibility, but there's a reason the Onion is struggling these days, because they can't keep up with real life. Like, it's too close to what's really going on.
The whole eating pets and all that, like saying it again today.
Listen, that's where we are as a society.
Tripling down on immigrants eating.
That's where we are as a society.
I know. You're right.
Sports is a microcosm of what? Society.
Yeah, and look, we're in the satire business sometimes too. And believe me, I know it's hard. I know it's really difficult to do it because the reality beats you to it. But that is when it happens in sports, and of course the moment you see it. Gambling. You think it's gambling. It's got to be gambling. Somebody got him, and he was doing it because he had a big bet,
And it was more.
I thought it was gambling at first when I first saw the headline. I was like, oh yeah, this guy, we got another minor leaguer, you know, gambling.
And I thought, here we go. Like this is the start of something really bad. It's a start of a multi-week news cycle about gambling infiltrating professional sports, like it did college baseball. No, he just wants the season to end.
Here's my question: does Derek Bender play pro baseball again?
Hell no,
ever.
No, there's no way, right?
Hell no.
I would think no, but I just want to make sure I'm running it by. The group, we're going to crowdsource this one.
No.
I wouldn't think it would be possible.
Thumbs down.
No.
You're not welcoming him. You're not bringing that guy in, you know, with that reputation.
There are some leagues in the world where he'd be dead.
That's facts.
Seriously, there are some.
They take it very seriously.
There are some places where he could be playing professionally where he wouldn't just be cut. He'd be, when they say cut, like cut.
Yeah, that's. Yeah.
Telling you. You are listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers at itsnotagameillinois.com. It rolls on into the Scores afternoon show next. Matt Spiegel and double-dipping David Haw is going to be joining us next.